to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures. S&P futures are going to add morning here. We got S&P futures down 11. NASDAQ up 26 and the Dow down 163. So we're kind of a mixed bag this morning, but mixed bag somewhat severely, not just a little bit. Lou, how are you, bud?
Good morning, sir.
What's the good word out of Colorado? You guys don't have any fires, do you?
We had a couple of fires burning, out west. Nothing major. We have had nothing, mercifully, like last year. And I don't know if I told you this story, but I was coming north on Interstate 25 from Colorado Springs to Denver, coming back into the city from somewhere. And I you could see these fires burning on the horizon in terms of the smoke clouds they produce. I mean, they're that big. And as I was watching, I saw this huge uptick in smoke. I actually thought it was a thunderhead forming. That, there was one fire burning sort of a smoke cloud on the sort of the right side of the front range that I could see. And then suddenly this huge explosion of smoke just billowing up. And I was thinking, that can't be a fire, because if it's a fire, it's completely out of control. And of course it was a fire. Something called I believe it's the East Comfort Fire, but it basically went from a relatively small, couple thousand acre burn to 20,000 acres in the space of like an hour, and then accelerated from there. But we've got a lot of smoke in the air right now from fires in Arizona and California and one of our own. But it was a cool day here yesterday. We had some rain move through, and that seems. I hope that is dampening down the incidence of wildfires. I will say this: I was up in the mountains yesterday. It is positively lush, at least in the area where I was, which is really unusual for this time of year. Very green.
Well, that's good, right?
Yeah, the predominant colors. You know this, but the predominant colors in the West are gray and brown.
Oh, yeah.
especially in the summertime, and not this year. It's even at high altitudes, we're seeing a lot of vegetation, good and bad. I mean, a little inside baseball for wildfire issues. It's good in the sense that when you get all that greenery up, it means there's a lot of water and you don't have a lot of potential tinder. It's bad because it's likely in the following year you're not going to have as much water. All that stuff dries up, goes dormant, and now you've got a fair amount of dry tinder on the ground that'll ignite.
So, well, that was going to be my next question.
How many year, probably not great for next year.
After a fire year, how many years does it take to build up enough fuel for fire? Just one?
Well, yeah, because let me back up. Typically, a fire will burn, it'll burn the ground, brush up, and then it burns up the branches of the pine trees, but doesn't burn the trees to the ground. So, for example, in big stretches of Colorado where they've had fires in the last 20 years, what you've got is a bunch of basic, tree trunks standing up with no branches on them. Or the branches burn to nothing, for thousands of acres. And then the ground is basically black. There is greenery coming up through there, but it's not lush enough or close enough together to provide a basis for a fire. But the fires that burn through here are burning, for the most part, in brush that has accumulated over, you know, 20, 30, 40 years.
That's what I thought, yeah.
That's why Trump's comment that a lot of the California fires were, when he was president, were based on the fact that they weren't clearing the ground brush was basically correct. I mean, it's a forest management function. So around our mountain house and in our little community up there, we are known as what's called a firewise community because we've gone through and we've had crews come through and clear out old, you know, dead wood, fallen trees, brush, that kind of thing, and just clear it off or in the areas around the houses there to sort of ease the burden of the crews when they get up in there.
Don't they do controlled burns?
Fire breaks, things like that.
Don't they do controlled burns, or didn't they used to?
They still do controlled burns. But those are few and far between. Controlled burns are dangerous, especially if in a situation where you've got a lot of dry wood and tinder on the ground. Even a controlled burn with a good wind can find itself out of control real quickly.
There are
a number of episodes of that within the last decade. And so controlled burns up here, they'll do them, but they're not favored.
Well, they are needed. I mean, they have a lot of them, Matty, is where you're going. If you're going to Michigan City next week, or Indiana, wherever you're going, well-deserved vacation, and where you drive through along 20 or 12 there, they'll have controlled burns there because it's, but they don't do them when it's really dry. I mean, they do them when it's, and they have, you know, a bunch of fire trucks, and they try and keep it down to, you know, a couple of football fields or whatever. But if you don't do them, they used to do them, but if you don't do them, we're behind where Audrey lives in Orland. This is how the, you know, parts of the world, the politics is involved, kind of really sucks, but I know this is my criticism of the political system week, I guess, but then again, it's not like I don't deserve it. Well, she's got somebody, there's kind of a half-assed lake, a creek that comes out of this area in back of her, but it's wetlands, right? And it's, you know, native, whatever. So they decide, okay, somebody donates the property or spends a bunch of money, some philanthropist kind of guy, nothing wrong on his part. He donates this thing, and it's like Lou's donated, it's not wetlands, but nature preserve or something. Well, of course.
Nature Conservancy.
But of course they don't conserve anything about nature. You know, what I'm saying is there's been a bunch of invasive species really all over the country. Well, now they got these kind of weed trees that are just growing there to where the point where, you know, Audrey gets her, you know, sometimes with all good intentions, you feel like you need to strangle your mate. She was out there with a chainsaw and like saws these things down. I'm like, Audrey, what are you doing? This is, what do you mean? I got this new chainsaw. I go, just whatever. I mean, I said, the village has to come over here with a bulldozer. They have to do a control burn. They got to get these invasive species out of here. It bears no resemblance to where this guy donated it to the village, and they need to do something. I mean, get a few of your neighbors and go to the friggin' meeting, for God's sake, and say, what are you guys doing? Or you're not doing. Well, they had a control burn there, and they screwed it up or almost made it to somebody's house. So now they haven't done a control burn in like 15 years, but the thing looks horrible. I mean, it's nowhere near what, you know, I mean, you would think that somewhere in some budget someplace, you would, I mean, but this thing, you know, I mean, I, whatever, I mean, you're right, once this stuff gets, I'm not going to say Trump was right, but once you let this stuff get crazy, there's a discipline to this, right? I mean, and it's just normal, but it'd be different if the people weren't well, there working, but they are where they're working, they're just not doing it.
Yeah, you can't do control burns, at least in our area, in forested areas to clear stuff. If you light the forest floor on fire, it gets up into the trees, and once it gets up into the trees, you lose control of it. So clearing forest floor is a very labor intensive, you know, kind of operation, and it involves getting in and just hauling stuff out, by hand with machines, whatever. But if you drive through parts of Colorado, you'll see where the National Forest Service has engaged in clearing operations and these firewise kind of operations, where they've gone in and basically done what natural forest fires would do, which is burn, clear off the slash and the deadwood, pull all that stuff out of there, so that a fire burning on the ground doesn't have enough fuel to really sustain itself. Where they will do control burns, where there are trees, they're typically doing that for firefighting lane purposes. They will burn a section of the woods in a line or a swath that is designed to stop a fire if it gets started in the main part of the national forest, designed to stop a fire, slow it down before it gets to, you know, an inhabited area. It's amazing if you drive through one of the largest, up until last year, one of the largest fires in Colorado history, called the Hayman Fire, and you drive through, and there were a lot of houses in this area, and you'll drive along and see, you know, burn area, you know, these stick, spindly trunk trees that are basically charred for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of acres, and then you'll come on a house that they were able to protect. That you know, had a fire barrier around itself of open area, and you know, this is repeated over and over again within these burn scars. The other issue, of course, that happens when you get a fire that comes through and burns all the ground cover off, is now, you know, this is not really the soil here at these mountain areas is not really that rich, and it. If you don't have plants on it holding it together, mountain plantation or mountain vegetation holding it together, it washes away and slides. And so Interstate 70 has been closed in both directions. You know, that's a major east-west thoroughfare, closed in both directions near a place called Glenwood Springs, where had mud pouring out of these canyons, down the mountain slopes and across the interstate, as a result of these fires, because there's nothing left to hold the soil up there.
Well, you know, it's interesting, of course, with me, and it shouldn't, Lou, and it's probably nails people, but what's this guy talking about? A lot of this comes down to how you assess your money and how you think of things. I mean, treasurer of the city of Chicago was out talking about it's $1.5 million now. She puts all this money together without any regard to the truth, any regard to any sort of a rigorous assessment. She decides it's $1.5 million now per shooting, and we should take all that money and put it into preventive stuff. And I'm like, really? I mean, come on.
What does she mean? How does she arrive at that figure?
I'm going to say it's your fault. Some guy from Duke, your alma mater, came out with some study and talked about the price of a murder to a society. I haven't read the thing. It's got to be around somewhere. I thought maybe you did, or if anybody would, you would have. But by the way, that's a compliment, not a shot. Evidently she put some inflation on it. This is many years ago article. So somehow or another, she comes up with $1.5 million per pop. And then multiplies it out, so she comes up to Chicago spent, I don't know how many years it was, I missed that part, $6 billion Chicago is now in the hole for murders. And I'm like, really? I mean, I don't know where that, but it's almost like an AOC comment, where we should just take the $6 billion and spend it somewhere else, on prevention. Yeah, but you can't do that while they're happening every day. Because that
is... What is this, I love this idea, so... So, and that's sarcasm. So what do they want to spend? This is classic. We need to spend more money. Every time there's a shooting or a spate of shootings, we need to spend more money. On what?
Well, that's the whole thing. It's on mental health. It's on child education. It's on, you know, making sure the parents have this and that. It's all these things.
Is there a single piece of evidence anywhere? I'm unaware of it. That indicates that spending money on whatever you want to call it, early intervention or whatever, targeted to these communities, is effective.
I'll put it this way, Lou. You would say that you would rather, if you could, you would rather spend the money on education and child care than on emergency room visits. I mean, I don't think anybody would dispute that necessarily. If there was a correlation,
I don't dispute. I'm all in favor of cutting down emergency room visits as a result of.
But the idea that it's somehow a one-to-one thing, and you could pull. But the point is, you can't stop. You can't. You know, it's like, wouldn't it be nice to stop treating old people for lung cancer that have smoked their whole life? Wouldn't it have been better for them to spend the money on? Like not having cigarettes or whatever. I'm not advocating. I'm just so. Wouldn't it have been better? Well, you can dream that, right? But that's just what it is—a dream, right? You know, wouldn't it have been better for our parents' generation? Your dad wasn't that old, but my parents' generation, if they didn't give free cigarettes to people in the Army, well, yeah. So what does that mean exactly? Should I stop? Wouldn't it have been better? Wouldn't it have been cheaper to say, hey, you bleeps can't give cigarettes to soldiers, so they all come back addicted to cigarettes, and oh, by the way, their girlfriends then becoming their, wouldn't it have been better? I don't think any of us would say, no, it wouldn't have been better. It would have, you know, is there somebody
but,
that
but dominant? I kind of think that's just kind of an idiotic analysis because at least the way, not necessarily the Duke analysis, I haven't seen that, but the idea that there somehow was this pot of $6 billion sitting out there.
Well, yeah, that's the crazy part.
That you could spend alternatively. There wasn't.
No, well, that's what, you know, like AOC, when she came out and said, you know, but what she meant and what she saw, I'm going to say, this is going to all my, the conservative people are going to go nuts here. What she meant and what she saw, I think, were legitimate. The way she phrased it was not very bright. But that doesn't mean she's not very bright. It just means that particular, where she said, was it Amazon or somebody? We don't want to give all this money to Amazon. We want to use it somewhere else. But it's the Amazon situation. It's almost like a sports analysis. Papa Bear, George Halas, didn't pay Red Grange all that money. Red Grange went out and earned it so he could get paid, right? I mean, he was barnstorming. He was everything. His knee was messed up. He played anyway. I mean, it's like Howard Stern. They didn't give Howard Stern that contract because the guy had the money. Howard Stern earned the money and then got paid, right?
Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but a lot of people don't kind of understand that. I mean, so yeah, you can't just say we're going to turn off the spigot in the emergency room at County Hospital today and go, by the way.
Yeah, and suddenly we'll have this giant pot of money. As I said, I don't think throwing money at these issues is going to, I'm unaware of anything that says, yeah, this is going to reduce the shooting rate because we do a better job in whatever. You and I have had this discussion,
yeah.
It's been a while, but you know, the kind of intervention you're talking about with the people that are predominantly the shooters in Chicago, who are, you know, young African American males and young Hispanic males are as the primary victims and the shooters. I mean, the kind of intervention you're talking about is it's an early childhood intervention, but it basically involves removing those kids from that environment, getting them out of their houses, getting them out of their neighborhoods, and isolating them away from it because the environment there is so toxic that you know, it's not like you're just going to go in and just spread a bunch of money around and say, here, we're going to teach you that carrying a handgun and shooting people with it is a you know, a bad thing. I'm pretty sure they know that.
They don't know the seriousness of it, or it wouldn't be. We had 2 5-person shootings yesterday. I
saw the headline.
And then some poor guy got beat up by 2 kids and killed by University of Chicago. They wanted his car. I mean, this is, but Lou, I think, you know, I apologize for always bringing stuff back to money. But I love the people who were behavioral economists, the George Stiglers of the world, as much as I quote Milton Friedman only because of the insane things our Fed is doing. And I listened to Powell yesterday, and I'm glad if I'd have been a concealed carry, the concealed carry would have shot the TV. I don't know what that guy's talking about. If I was one of those representatives, I would have asked for his resignation right there. I mean, that's how bad I feel about it. Not him personally, but this is idiotic. This is absolutely idiotic. You're worried about money supply? Well, we'll fix you. We won't give you the money supply numbers anymore. I mean, how anybody's allowed to do that in today's world? I have no idea. We're not going to, you don't like the taxes? Well, guess what? We're just going to tax you. We're not going to publish the tax rate. We're just going to take it out of you. All right. Well, that's an interesting way to solve the problem, isn't it, Lou? But, I think that one of the circumstances and what we've really seen, I mean, and Carl goes into this more than I do, but we've really seen is the exact opposite of the Roosevelt, one of the first things he did when he got in office. And but people, you got to look at the numbers, even though the pictures tell a thousand words. I mean, he had 13, 14-year-old girls working in garment factories, right, working their fingers to the bone before they, and not even going to school. Well, that, for lack of a better term, that really sucks, right? Not to mention the boys are out, breaking concrete or something when they're 14. But so when you stop child labor and you said, okay, you can't work till you're 16, what you really did was drag a certain amount of people out of the workforce, which cut the supply, which meant that over a period of a very short period of time, but going forward, that now people had to pay more to get labor, right? So it helped.
Yeah, well, that was not one of the first things Roosevelt did.
Well, okay.
The Fair Labor Standards Act was not passed until 1937, I believe.
Okay, but they did. There was some movement against child labor earlier than that. I think Hoover even started some, didn't he?
Oh, there was a significant movement against child labor, and if you want to see some heartbreaking photographs, pull up the pictures of those kids they had working in the mines.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is the economics of
the whole Fair Labor Standards Act is designed to introduce inefficiency into the transaction between employers and employees.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying
is that inefficiency raises the wage.
Well, I don't think having, I guess you can have not have your 14-year-old daughter working in a garment factory is an inefficiency. It is.
I mean, I'm speaking very bluntly, but that's what it is. The idea was that we are going to make it harder for you to get efficient labor. By efficient labor, I mean wringing every ounce of labor out of the system. And child labor, don't get me wrong, child labor was a horrible situation at that point. It was pernicious. It was terrible, but you're exactly right. It was designed to cut the available supply of labor, which was there up until the time the statute was enacted. It was designed to cut the available supply of labor by child labor, which was
one source.
And the other source was by introducing a minimum wage.
I'm going to say,
and a maximum hour a week before you had to pay overtime.
I'm going to say, Lou, that in terms of efficiency, the way you're using the term, when your dad coached the offensive line, it would have been a hell of a lot more efficient if he would have equipped everybody with brass knuckles and maybe a knife. But there needs to be rules, right?
He actually was in favor of that. But I'll let that pass. We can talk about that later. One of his players talked about the fact that he did not coach technique as much as a lot of other coaches, and that he didn't tell people, look, you have to put your feet here and whatever. And his response was, you guys are professionals. You have risen to the top of your profession by doing things a certain way. And I'm not going to change that unless it's absolutely necessary. And then he said, quite frankly, if you could figure out some way to smuggle a knife or a pair of brass knuckles out onto the field to take care of your guy and the refs don't notice it, I'm fine with that.
Well, the only thing about the technique thing is I think he was in somewhat of a different time, Lou, because I think people can get to a certain level just because they're genetic freaks in terms of speed and size and strength, and maybe don't even know some techniques. I mean, he probably in his day probably people did learn the fundamentals in high school and so forth. I'm not so sure he does today.
Well, they did have techniques that they coached and that they wanted the players to do. But if he had somebody like, and the guy that he put this, again, I'll go back to another story. If you have a guy like Randall McDaniel, who's in the NFL Hall of Fame, who's an offensive guard for the Vikings, and he came in as a rookie, and Jerry Burns, who passed away recently, came over to my father one day at practice and said, McDaniel's got the worst stance I've ever seen in my life. And at this point, Randall was beating up on pretty much everybody in the NFL that was up against him. And my father took Burnsy aside and said, Jerry, when you got a goose laying golden eggs, you don't mess with the goose.
His son would trade on the trading floor, Jerry's, and I think he was in Illinois.
Yeah,
state,
right, Mike.
He was a state racquetball champion, wasn't he?
He
was awful good.
That.
He was awful good. I know he might not have won, but he you know, he was pretty close. He probably, I don't know if he ever won,
yeah.
But what I'm getting at, Lou, is this thing with offshoring some stuff overseas, a lot of stuff. I mean, we don't.
I'm sorry, we suddenly jumped from.
Well, I was trying
to international relations. Where
well,
we
no,
go?
What I'm saying. Well, we're going to throw it to break. When we come back. What we've done is the flip side of that. And we've essentially said Chinese peasants, for lack of a better term, because that's not a good term, are now part of our labor force. And if they're willing to work for 3 cents an hour, that's part of the deal. And what Carl's always talking about is we've gotten, I was mentioning to some people last night, is that we've gotten to the point now where the fall in position, the fallback position for us, was to have two members of the family now work where nobody's at home. Well, you might have, you know, child care and so forth, but nobody's at home. And now all of a sudden you have run the point where, well, guess what? The families aren't as much together. Sometimes the kids aren't as well looked after during the day as when somebody is home. And now we're paying that price. But there's a price to everything, right? I mean, you can't just say, oh, mother and father. I'm not saying that the guy should always work or the woman, but I'm saying when you don't have one person at home, at least most of the time, the family unit now is different. I'm not going to say better or worse, but by and large, you know, I think most neighborhoods were better when somebody was at home all day, right? I mean, in terms of child rearing and discipline and you name it, right? I'm not saying you should be beating up on your kids or anything like that, but there's economic costs of everything you do. I mean, that's my point here. I mean, and we went one way for a while to help the labor force get their piece of the pie. And now there's firms that don't see any issue with, you know, Jamie Dimon making $90 bazillion a year and the clerks in the banks in Manhattan making an amount where they qualify for food stamps. I mean, come on, Lou. I mean, we're way off the train from where we were, right? S&P futures down 19 now. NASDAQ futures down 16. We're leaking here. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom. I just met Weber on the board. Mr. Will Michaels with us as he is every Thursday morning. And we have S&P futures now down 18. So we're leaking here, and I don't quite know why we're all of a sudden this second hour. We were down earlier in the S&P, but we're up in the NASDAQ. NASDAQ's now down 11. And the Dow is down 213. Individual stocks, not anybody going crazy here, but Boeing's down 233. I mean, Caterpillar's down $1.37. There's a lot of them here down, you know, mid-bucks, or United Healthcare is down 224. But no, there's no big number down like $10 or anything like that. It's everybody's. The only guy who's up is Honeywell's up $1.58, and Nike's, Procter & Gamble's up 2 cents. Everything else in the Dow is down. So it's pretty much across the board. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 183, that's 1.2%, FTSE down 65.9%, CAC around down 61.98. I think, I mean, whatever, let me give your opinion to why the market's doing what it's doing. It's kind of crazy because nobody knows, but I think the whole idea that these bonds are moving in an opposite direction from where they should be normally with inflation moving up is kind of crazy, but I don't think that's what's causing the market to do this, but one never knows. This is even odder over here in Asia. Nikkei down 329, that's 1.2%. Shanghai up 36, that's 1%. Hang Seng up 208.7%. So we had some Chinese numbers that the Chinese economy grew at a pretty good pace in the second quarter. I guess if you believe those, you're okay. Dow was up 44 yesterday, S&P up 5, NASDAQ down 32. So kind of a quiet and mixed day yesterday. Bonds down another 230, 10-year yield down another 230 seconds at 1.32. Going minus 0.02 yesterday to minus 0.33. Japan positive 0.01. 10-year UK is positive 0.65. Oil down pretty heavy from the 75 hours it was a few days ago. Down $1.38 today to 71.75. Brent down $1.26, 73.50. Natural gas down a penny to 3.64. RBOB down 3 cents, 2.26. So we're getting some movement down in those areas. Gold's up $1.70 at 18.26. So it's hanging in there. Silver up 2 cents, 26.30. Copper up 2 cents, 4.28. And we've got Bitcoin down 8.48 to 31,893. Like right in the middle. Maybe slightly in the bottom end, bottom side of that range it's been in of about 29,000 to 36. So Bitcoin can't get out of its own way, and evidently the trading is lightened up considerably in there, and I don't know what that means really, but Matty, what do you got for us, Traffic, Weather, Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Looks like we have a crash on the outbound Eisenhower. That's at York Road out in the western suburbs, and it's blocking the exit ramp there, exit 12 onto York Road from the outbound Ike. So that's the only crash in the area right now on any of the area expressways, and that's affecting some traffic on the outbound I-290. Inbound side looks okay. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy at this hour. Traffic building on the Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Southside expressways are looking good. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, we have a crash out in Wheaton. Looks like Winfield Road at Mack Road. There's an accident involving an overturned vehicle that happened a little while ago. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, clouds early, and then a chance of some storms later on. Nice temperatures, though. A high of 76 with a chance of thunderstorms. Right now, it is mostly cloudy and 72 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 104. Right now it's clear and 85. In sports, the Suns had a chance to take a commanding 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals, but they fell apart late and their best player was in some foul trouble. And they lost to the Bucks 109-103 to even the best of seven series at 2 games apiece. Game 5 is back in Phoenix on Saturday night. Also, Chief, the British Open is underway this morning. Two guys are tied atop the leaderboard right now early at 4-under. Brian Harman, the American, and Mackenzie Hughes from Canada, both sitting at 4-under. Jordan Spieth is 1 shot back at 3-under. Brooks Koepka, 2 shots back at 2-under. Chief.
So when Chris Paul came down late in the game and looked at me, if somebody would have actually on the other team stood there holding his jack, would that have caused the foul?
Yeah, the game was very physical last night for those that had a chance to watch it. I watched most of it. Of course, I fell asleep and missed the best part, the final, 5 minutes. But it was very physical. They were letting them play. And for me, that's fun to watch. But they definitely call it differently in the playoffs than they do in the regular season.
Can't you get that dog to wake you up when it gets close?
He's asleep long before I am.
They get their routines, don't they? They don't.
That's right.
So Lou, I was out in Burr Ridge last night at this nice restaurant with some people, which of course is too late for me.
My old area. I lived right next door to Burr Ridge.
Did you used to go to the Capri or all those nice restaurants in that little area?
Yeah, I ate there several times.
Well, now the guy still has the huge tent, the COVID tent, out in the parking lot. He's just not moving it, so he's got like 40 extra tables, right? So the place is, I don't even want to know. Well, I'd love to know what the guy's gross is there a night. But anyway, we're out there, and it's late. And I got to get back downtown. So my significant other and the guy I'm with, of course, they're nerd night owls. So they're, I said, you guys stay here and solve the problems of the world. But it's like 10:30, right, for me. And so Audrey was like, all right, yeah, it's only take you 30 minutes to get home. Yeah, Miss Leadfoot, it would take you 30 minutes to get home, but any normal person. So, of course, I get on to Stevenson, and I'm doing 70 in the Suburban. I'm going to say 6 people pass me by. Had to be doing 100. I mean, we're talking about I'm parked. I'm like, I wasn't even a stagecoach. I was parked, right? And
Stevenson, I didn't see that often on the Stevenson. Usually that was the Eisenhower. The Eisenhower was the racetrack for me when I lived there. And invariably coming out of Chicago, it, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night after a show or dinner or something, I'd be passed by guys, doing the Fast and Furious imitation.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. The Eisenhower's bad at night.
Well, the other night I don't go out very often during the week, but so happened this week. It's two nights in a row, mainly because my significant other was around, and whenever she's around, it seems like I end up taking her out. But that's okay. That's part of the deal, as we both know. So we're at Marty Anthony's over on what street is that, Matty? It's on. I forget. I'm going brain.
It's not on Grand, is it?
No. It's the one just south of that. Anyway, it's the one right next to the railroad tracks. Is it Hubbard? It's on Hubbard. So the valet guy gives me the car. So I don't need the valet there, but I always do because it's free and I want to give the guy some dough. He's a nice guy. They had one of those flash mobs of crotch rackets bikes. There had to be 300 of them come flying down Hubbard, and I mean they're missing my mirror by a quarter inch. And they just kept coming, right through. The thing I don't understand, how stupid is the last guy? So now when you get to the end of Hubbard, Ogden Avenue comes by at an angle, right? And there's a light there. Well, of course, all the guys, when they're pouring through 200-300 of them, nobody's stopping for the light. But the last two idiots are kind of dragging. And they go right through the red, and I'm thinking, come on. If you can't keep up, you can't blow through the red like the other guys. I mean, what are the life chances of the last guy making it through the red light? I mean, it's like,
well,
you can't be that guy. I mean,
yeah, it's not that guy that I think is the crazy one. It's the front guys. It's the people leading the charge, because they're the ones that are going charging into the intersections with without any notice to the other drivers or the cross street drivers that there's this wave coming behind them. It's like a critical mass, the bike ride that goes through Chicago, what is it, the last Friday of each month in the summertime, where they get 4,000, 5,000 guys on bikes. and they just ride through the city, and they don't care about red lights or, you know, pedestrians or anything else. And I always thought, yeah, the front guy in that procession has to be careful, because, you know, when you're just basically breaking, you know, the law in terms of traffic violations, somebody in a car who doesn't get the memo, you know, could put an end to this thing real quickly.
Did you ever see the one where the
it's always surprised me that there's people up front willing to take that risk. It's kind of like those guys at the front of the Tour de France. You never know when some idiot's going to step out with a sign saying, "Hi, honey, I'm here," and knock down the whole, you know, the whole group.
Did you ever see the? Did they do this one anymore?
You saw that video, right?
Yeah.
Then they got. Was it a woman? They got her. They arrested her.
Yeah. Did they still do the naked bike ride? Man, they came by my place once.
I just saw a Twitter headline that it's back this year after a year off from COVID.
When I was at 70 West Huron, they used to come by once a year, and I'd be on the balcony. I'm like, yeah, these people, they're out of their mind. But anyway, what do you think?
You stand up in the saddle when you're making that ride.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. We're not talking about padded bike shorts here or anything like that. We're just talking anyway. So what do you make? Here's a headline. Don't people read this stuff? GM warns some Bolt EV owners, don't park them inside or charge them unattended overnight. What are you supposed to do? Watch the thing charge all night long?
Don't charge them unattended overnight?
Yeah.
Evidently, what is the danger of plugging it in?
They had a recall, and evidently the cars coming back from the recall are more dangerous than when they went in. So now they're searching for a solution to the problem. But if you just leave the plug in, evidently there's a chance of fire. I don't know, there's only been a few of them, but if it's in your garage and it's attached to the house,
it burns your house down. That's right. That's interesting. Well, so, you know, this is the light bulb is, I use that term deliberately, the light bulb is starting to go on or go off for people who are screaming, you know, we need to make our vehicles electric for purposes of climate control. In California, where they have a number of those things because of their strict emissions control, you know, they were actually telling people not to plug their cars in and not to charge them because their power grid could not keep up with the demand. And you and I've talked about this, Tom, where we've just said, you know, this electric vehicle thing is a great idea. Except that, you know, again, coming back to your economic discussion, there is no such thing as a free lunch. You know, electricity's got to come from somewhere, whether we burn it in our cars or we burn it in our power plants, or we create it in our power plants. And the demand on the grid of somebody plugging in, let's just even say a fraction of you know, total vehicles in the U.S., the demand on the grid would be monstrous.
Well, not only that, we don't want stinking power plants, right? We don't want any power plants.
I mean, the only way to deal if the country suddenly makes a quick switch to electric vehicles, we're not going to be able to keep up. And I mean, the only way to supply that I'm aware of without burning up West Virginia and Kentucky, or now Montana and Wyoming, is with nukes. And I really do think an intelligent discussion about electric vehicles without a discussion about nuclear power plants to supply the grid for demand is irresponsible and sort of nonsensical.
Well, why can't we just do this? As technology gets better and better, why can't we have a national thought towards renewable energy in any place that the technology today, and it doesn't have to actually match up. I mean, I don't have a problem with government helping things out when they start up. Okay, so I don't have a problem with a little bit of money up front, because I mean the original nukes were a pain in the ass to build and cost too much money, but now look at them; they lasted 20 years longer than they were supposed to, and they're the cheapest things we have, right? So I don't have a problem. I mean, as I drove across northern Arizona and New Mexico with the relentless sun and wind, I don't see how, even with today's technology, that you don't have an awful lot of gathering places for renewable energy there, and I don't see how you don't, when you get to, what's it, Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe, when you get to Topeka, Kansas, how you don't switch to electric locomotives for the rest of the way to California, I have no idea. There has to be, I mean, once you put the structure in, I mean, there's no reason to burn diesel across the desert, for God's sake. I mean,
I tend to agree with you. I did some regulatory work on this a while back, and of course the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, controls and regulates the ability of power companies to what's called wheel power across state lines to other users in other states. So, for example, in New Mexico, where I was, where we were doing this rate process, we were dealing with a situation where an electric company had built a nuclear generator and then was putting that thing online and trying to recoup the cost of building it by raising rates. And one of the things that the DOD user, which is who I represented, the DOD user was saying was, look, we don't want to be subject to this because we get our power when we need it from hydroelectric in Utah and in Washington State, because there's enough water there to keep the turbines going, and they always have access in the evenings. And they can wheel that power down through the grid to us when we need it, as opposed to us drawing this more expensive nuclear power because of your rate structure. That needs to get easier. if we really want to talk about using renewables effectively, we need to figure out ways, or we need to become better at moving electricity from places where it can be generated cheaply and where there's lots of land, so nobody cares if it's covered with solar collectors. Places like parts of New Mexico and Arizona and other places like that, and you know, private landowners who own hundreds of acres of basically dirt can put whatever they want up on there, and we can then take that and move it to places like California or whatever. But you still run into the problem with renewables of the fact that they are not consistent, and we don't have the storage technology, at least we don't have the storage capability to take that energy and use it when it's needed, specifically around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well,
in places like California,
you don't have most of your draw is in the daytime. But part of, I mean, the issue, like, we don't have much time, because I want to talk about something else here real quick. We have some of the capability to have high density power lines to where you can, they're way better than the ones you see. Okay, but now, if you put a plant up, a windmill in North Dakota, Commonwealth Edison, they want you to use their expensive power. They don't want to pay for the grid to let the stuff from North Dakota get here cheaply. But the thing where, I mean, I'm going to say, our listeners, if you go to Hoover Dam, I'd be surprised after listening to me and the rest of the people on the show for all these years. If you go to Hoover Dam and you look at the incredible thing there in a build out 1930-something and blah, 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 it's pretty fantastic. Except for Dr. J, he thought it was, why am I looking at all this concrete? I go, Johnny, you kind of missed the point, but that's another story. But if you look off to the, if it's a west or the east, there's a valley there, Lou, that I don't even think, it's so hot and flat, I don't even know if grasshoppers want to live there, because there's no grass. I don't see how, with all the power lines and everything already there for Hoover Dam, that you don't upgrade those power lines and you don't have solar collectors there for the next 50 miles. Because of those power lines already go to California, to Las Vegas, to every place. I don't see how the hell that you don't, I mean, that's a layup in my mind. And yet, there isn't.
Well, solar's pretty inefficient, number one, at least still. But number two, that power only exists as long as the sun is shining. And when the sun stops or gets cloudy, you don't have that power support.
But when are the brownouts in California when it's 100 degrees? They're in the daytime, Lou.
No, actually, most of the shutdowns occur in the late afternoon when the sun's energy drops, and California is no longer getting from its solar collectors no longer getting enough power to keep their grid functioning.
Well whatever it is, it's going to help. I mean, I'm saying you that is the most obvious spot I've ever seen. You've already got a bazillion wires coming from the electricity from the dam. So I'm saying you're.
My personal opinion is that they've got to come up with some kind of better storage capacity before any of that becomes.
Well, the two issues are you lose too much in the wires, and the other is the storage capacity. But if you want the solution
is something even I've talked about again previously, which is the solar collectors in space beaming down microwave power to receivers on Earth.
Sounds like
they stay up. They're always in the sun. They're constantly beaming. They can go, 24/7, and you can arrange to put something like that up there. NASA and DARPA have already demonstrated it, and I think that's a nice, well, safe, non-carbon based way of getting it. Now you'd have people, you have a certain segment of the population be running around putting aluminum foil on their heads.
I'd be one of those. They
would believe that the microwaves were getting into their brains and controlling them. But that's a demonstrated cheap.
Sounds like a weapon.
But say cheap.
Well, why can't you
cheap to build?
Why can't you at Hoover Dam, since you normally, especially now when the thing's so damn low to lake, you probably only have one or two of, I think there's six generators going. So why wouldn't you not let any water through in the daytime when the solar collectors are working, and have four of them running at night, and double your capacity at night in the late afternoon?
So let me give you. You've actually touched on a very important subject. This is an effective way of storing power, and they use it in Europe. I know there's some communities in the United States that use it. You set up a closed system with a big lake. And you put a turbine on it. I'll put the lake up the top of a hill. You put a turbine on it and a channel, so the lake flows out of the lake flows downhill through the turbine, generates electricity, collects in a pond at the bottom, and then you have a pump connected to a solar generator, and the solar generator collects power during the day, or it collects power and pumps the water up the hill, and then releases it when they need the power. That's an effective way of storing it.
Well, I have a real quick one, only like a minute. As you know, I've been one of the major people that has railed against this work from home crap. Now, I'm not going to say that there aren't people that are very efficient, but the more and more I look, we've paid an awful lot for nothing. Yesterday, I mean, it hits home because for some reason I let my passport. So, I got my thing here, and I went and got the picture and all that stuff, so I'm ready to send it in. So last night, I'm driving around, and waiting in traffic on the Stevenson. I hear about there's 2.1 million backed up in a passport renewal.
Holy cow.
Or in a passport renewal. So immediately pops into my feeble brain, all right, let me get this straight. If I could, I'd have somebody from whoever department does that telling me how efficient everybody's been working at home in that department for the last 18 months. And I would say to them, of course, I'd never get them invited back, I'd say, bull bleep, your people didn't do squat at home, or there wouldn't be 2 point. We paid, how many people did we pay from the government side? I mean, businesses, it's their own business. How many people did we pay at the government side to allegedly work at home from home and it didn't do squat, Lou? We lost a whole year.
A whole year, 18 months.
I mean, you can't tell me that these people did anything if nobody got renewed. That's their job. Oh, we were working for them. What exactly was the work? Doing your lawn?
Yeah, I know. I think we introduced, and there are people that say, well, I can work from home just as efficiently. The average, and again, you're my wheelhouse here. The average person is significantly less effective working from home than they are from an office in terms of general productivity, office productivity. And, the passport, any government service that delivers a product directly to the consumer, you get a pretty good measure of just how efficient they were working from home over the last year. And the short answer is not very.
Well, I have just a real stupid question. How exactly would that even work? If I mailed it to them 8 months ago, it's going to go to someplace, you know, Passport Renewal Bureau. Nobody's there. Right, so who picks up the mail, and how do you get it to Maddie Weber's house if he's supposedly working from home, and what does he do there? The passport has to be printed up back at the other place where there's nobody there. I mean, you're not going to give all these people those kind of printers, which have got to be pretty expensive for a passport. You know, how do you even do it, Lou? Except pay people. I mean, how do you do passport one from somebody working at home?
I assume that the work from home that they farm out, rather than the physical assembly of the passport, that they farm out involves, you know, checking, making sure the form is good, and they're working off of digital images. So your passport gets in, somebody has to take it when it's getting mailed in, scan it, send it out to somebody who then checks it, looks at it, puts a new digital image together, and then sends it back to the printer for assembly, and then somebody has to drop it into an envelope for you.
But we're assuming that there needs to be at least a body there to collect the mail. I don't know if they had anybody.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't get it. I mean, there's reasons why the supply chain is all messed up. I don't think these people did anything except get paid.
That wouldn't surprise me a bit. I mean, we know, for example, that the remote teaching, where we were paying, paying a significant population of people to work from home, we know that it was a disaster for the students who were involved. And I was, what a surprise, if you don't corral children into an environment where they can learn, you just leave them in their homes, guess what? They don't participate, or they don't learn, or they're too easily distracted. That's why we put the classrooms up in the first place.
One of my friends is, we got a dasher, his wife, or his girlfriend, his lady, is a Chicago public school teacher. So she flunks two kids. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier in the week. So she gets called into the principal's office. And let's just say, Lou, that if they still had paddles, they would have used it. What are you doing, flunking these two kids? She says, well, it's not like they didn't do so well. They never showed up. They never even tuned in. Doesn't matter. Got to pass them. Okay. I mean, what are we doing, Lou?
We're making fools out of ourselves. That's what we're doing.
Yes, we are. On that note, Lou, have a nice weekend. Stay away from fires. Are you mountain climbing in this weather, or what are you doing?
It's actually kind of rainy today, but I'm going to be actually on the top of Pikes Peak on Sunday.
Are you driving or walking?
I'm actually getting on the world's highest railroad.
Really?
And riding it up from Manitou Springs.
Now, you know I'd love to do that. Is this a narrow gauge?
No, I think it's a standard gauge track, but they just recently renovated that entire system. So it was down for 4 years. So this is, get a chance now to ride the train up. It's on, I think there's Swiss rail cars, and we ride up to the top, and they've got a new visitor center up there. I'm hoping we see something. The weather's not supposed to be great.
I'm gonna bet that it originally was narrow gauge.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah,
and if you want to see a horrible picture of something I've actually climbed, look up something called the Incline in Manitou Springs, which was a cog railroad that existed up there. They've now replaced it with a hiking trail.
A cog railroad means there was a pulley to pull it up, right?
It means that the wheels were actually cog wheels.
Okay.
That engaged on a series of teeth on the track to pull the car up.
Oh, because so it couldn't otherwise it would slip down.
Yes.
All right, bud.
That would be bad.
That would be bad. Have a nice time. S&P futures will come back some here. Going down 14, and Nasdaq's only down 3. Come back. We'll have Mr. Dan Janitas.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708- 208-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Matt Weber. On the board, S&P futures down 14.50. We're down like over 20 a minute ago. We're down 20 in the NASDAQ, which is now unchanged. NASDAQ has got like a 20-point, seemingly like a, almost like a 20-point spread in the thing lately. Dan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I was hoping today that you would tell me the exact point to buy puts in this TLT that's going up every day, which means bond yields are going down in the bond, 10-year bond, oh, this is 20 and over. Bonds are going up. If you could just tell me, is it what, 148.50, 149.50? Where do I break the cookie jar and just say I'm going short this thing and I'm going long puts?
I honestly don't have a... I'm not going to put a number out there. Are you looking for, just a sense of... where investors are going here, because I think, that it could probably still keep going. Things could probably continue to run. I mean, like everything right now, things are probably running further than expected, but that one, you're on your own.
All I know is that a wise investor in the fixed income area that you are, and there's probably a lot of people like you, maybe not as good, I know that there's not a snowball's chance in hell that with an inflation rate that's pushing the high card, the actual tout is 5.5%, probably more like 6 or 7, that you're going to invest in a 10-year thing at 1.3. And since the trade is such a non-starter, it can only go one way. The question is when.
I do agree with you on that. It's funny, I was taking a look at, if we look at what's happened recently and the yield curve has flattened, definitely. But then you go back to the beginning of the year, and if you look at where we were at the beginning of the year, the yield curve was actually flatter. The short, 3 month, 1 year was at, 0.09. Now it's at 0.06. 10-year was at 0.93. 30-year was at 1.6 at the first of this year. So yields have, in recent weeks, they've come down, no question, and there's not necessarily any upward pressure. However, when you hear, when you see the Wall Street Journal saying that the Fed is inching towards a discussion of tapering, I don't know that that's going to happen anytime soon. And when you see the Fed buying, still buying back $80 billion in treasuries a month and $40 billion in mortgage-backed securities, I don't know if we're going to necessarily see, you know, any uptick from here in the near term. So, you know, theoretically, you know, the 10-year was down at 0.93 at the first of the year. You know, it was at 1.33. It was, you know, much higher just a month and a half ago. So it's a you know, it's really anybody's call at this point what's going to happen. However, I do think there is going to be, for the short run, downward pressure on rates. I don't think we're going to see any, you know, inflation is there, but I don't think we're going to see any major movement upward as long as the Fed is continuing to buy back at the rate they are, and as long as, you know, we still have foreign investors that are buying, still viewing our market as the quality place, the place to put quality assets. And we still have a lot of investors who have to buy fixed income for whatever reason. You know, there is still a... So I don't know that we're going to see a sharp uptick here, but I don't think this is the bottom necessarily either.
Well,
bottom meaning with rates.
Well, is there any legislative limit? I mean, it looks to me, and again, please correct me because I'd love to be corrected here. It looks to me like they have to keep buying more and more and more because they're getting further and further away from what I would consider to be a normal market rate. And when they start talking about knocking off $1 trillion every few months, you know, is collectively dumb as our legislators are, they're going to say, "Wait a minute, what do you?" I mean, I don't think the Fed. Well, we'll talk more about better stuff, but I don't think the Fed is ever going to stop by themselves. And that's the scary part, Dan. I think that it's going to become such a disoriented mess. That they're going to get Powell's resignation, and they're going to, I mean, it could absolutely blow up. I mean, it'll be almost like the 70s, only worse. And I really don't want to see that. And you know, I don't see anybody saying, "Hey, what are you doing?" I mean, unless it's behind the scenes.
I would agree. I mean, I've been saying, "What are you doing?" in my to a certain degree here. I mean, cutting back, you know, tapering a little bit, I think is would be more prudent thing than to, you know, just sort of cut it off altogether, but waiting for, you know, being reactive to inflation, I would call it wage inflation data, because I really think that's the sticky inflation. Being reactive to it is, I'm not sure is really the smartest thing, and I don't think continuing to make, you know, buying back bonds, I think you're right, there's a limit that you can go to before we start getting into the, you know, the rates start looking at, you know, like they did earlier this year, and you know the thoughts about negative rates come back again. So, no, there doesn't seem to be anyone who wants to slow this thing down in the near term. And what I'm seeing, which is interesting, just from a, you know, both from a business point of view, but also just from kind of looking around, because I'm still up here in the Boston area. I mean, everybody is out, everybody is spending. People are. I know part of it has to do with people getting back to getting outside again and being able to get to restaurants and everything, but I see a huge amount of consumer confidence coming back, and I see that only accelerating. So I don't know how the Fed can't be looking at that and saying, you know, this is a trend that's going on. And I think when it's going to start hitting will be in September, when kids go back to school and people are actually going back to the workplace in person. And then we're going to be looking at what happened in that third quarter, and looking at the expansion in the economy ticking up. Maybe at that point they start tapering, but it's going to be reactive rather than proactive, and that's never a good thing.
Well, I just what how far out? I mean, in the stuff that you buy, people, how what's the max you're going now? Like 2 years, 3 years? I mean, I can't believe you're going 20. I mean.
No, I stay very short, and our strategy has always been to stay more on the short side, especially when you're buying corporates. I don't know that you're getting that much bang for your buck to go long, especially not today. Maybe a couple months ago, you were for a short period of time there, but yeah, I mean, you have to look out the length, whatever the length of the, you know, the bond you're buying. So say you're buying a 10-year, you got to look out over those 10 years and expect that you're going to see, you're going to see bonds being priced below par. So I still think there are other alternatives to getting income. You know, we've talked about that in the past. A few of the names that we own that have, you know, we have talked about SELF, the self-storage, S-E-L-F. Now, that was trading at over 6, and it's down to about 5.2, and you're still getting 6.5% for a, you know, it's a pretty good stable yield. And we've talked about SWM, which is a dividend, you know, is a stock that has a 4.5% dividend. That stock has come in. I think it's a really good buy under 40. You know, it was trading, you know, close to 60 at one point. So it's looking at names like that, looking at some of the names that have sold off that are giving you some yield still, there are still opportunities. It takes a little bit more work to find them. But going long in treasuries and trying to time the short-term play here, you know, what's the Fed going to do? I'd avoid that investment. You know, I don't know that that's a, you know, it's, it, I don't know that that's where the upside is. And then, you know, looking at sort of continuing to chase equities that are on their way up may not be where it is, but looking at some of these names that have sold off that are giving you attractive, dividends, I think that's probably where the money should be going right now.
Well, even, I mean, there's all kinds of, there's people that are talking about the market's telling you, first of all, how do you even look at the market? I mean, I'm just asking this. How do you look at the market when the Fed's the market? I mean, how do you look at the market in Europe? When was it you that told me that the those guys own like 80 or 90% of like half the QSIP numbers, the central bank?
Yeah, they own quite a bit, right?
But how is that the market? I mean, it doesn't resemble a market, does it? I mean, really? How, when you talk at some of the stuff that you're 5% right now, and some of the ones you've dug up, looks pretty friggin' good. But
yeah,
you know what? Where are those things going to be if the Fed loses control and all of a sudden? I mean, I went back. I shouldn't have done this, Dan. I went back and looked at Fed funds rate in the late '60s and all the way up to like 82. There were months where they went up 2 and 3% in a month. You know, I mean,
it's always possible. Like I said, I think the fear again is not so much. I don't think they're going to be proactive. I think they're going to wait for some data, and I think that data is going to come in the third quarter. Like I said, after the summer, you know, the quarter we're in right now, I think it's going to be very solid for, I'm not talking about the earnings that are coming out, but I'm talking about the earnings that will come out in early October after the third quarter is over. I think it's going to be great for companies and also small businesses, because a lot of small businesses now, I think, are benefiting from this, you know, sort of, I don't know, the people getting out and doing things and spending. And so I think we're going to see an economy that's even stronger as the year goes on. And I think maybe at that point they're going to start to pull the reins in a little bit. The Fed will pull the reins in a little bit. So it's, I think it's a combination of watching that and just kind of trying to get a sense of what they're, you know, what, like I said, I see them as being more reactive rather than trying to look ahead. I would be looking ahead right now and saying, observation says that this is going to continue, or the economy is going to continue to accelerate here, at least for the next few months. So maybe we need to pull the reins in a little, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. So I think we're going to be sitting here with low rates for a little bit longer. Then there is going to be an event that happens at some point, probably, that will trigger the pullback from the Fed and probably a raise in short rates. That is, again, part of the long-term business cycle that we keep forgetting, because we're more than 10 years into this now. If you skip that year and a half COVID period, we got to go back to 08, you know, to the last time that, you know, sort of the beginning of the expansion in 09. So, there is a part of the business cycle that's contractionary, and that's going to happen. And it's just a question of time. And it's just, I think, has to do with the acceleration in the economy. I see that coming, and then I see that, you know, increasing in the next few months here. And as, like I said, especially as people get back to the office, back to school in the fall, people are spending, you know. Anybody who's looked for, you know, plane tickets recently, hotel rooms, rental cars, you know, besides all the other obvious, you know, the food, price increasing, and also just companies having to pay a lot more to hire the right people or to find people, period. So I think the wage inflation sticks, and I think that's going to be something that will continue to drive the growth of the economy in the next, you know, over the next year. And I think the Fed will hopefully wake up at some point and start cutting back a little bit.
So you're still
neutralize things
for the moment, at least, and hopefully forever. You're still in the camp that the Fed retains control and somewhere is forced to change policy, and they do it.
At this point, I think I think this is where they are now. I don't think that's where they've always been back in history, but I think that's where they are today. I think they're afraid of making a mistake, if you will.
Yeah, I'm
afraid of doing something too soon and then having a negative consequence. I'm not sure where they're getting their data or information, because when I listened to Powell yesterday, like I said, certain things stuck out in the conversation about, especially the amount of buying, you know, $80 billion a month of treasuries for the last 12 months. That adds up. But I don't know that they're really seeing, you know, this acceleration that is happening pretty much across the board. I think they're looking at areas that have been left behind, and some of those areas that have been left behind may never come back, but the vast majority of the economy is coming back in spades right now.
Don't disagree. They poured money into the system that really they made up. Okay, so you have this,
yes,
this nominal, I'll use the term, this nominal push to the upside in the economy, but unless you, I never was a big, I would love to see it happen, but every time somebody says it, I think it turns out to be a bunch of BS. Is the idea that if you can, I don't think there's any question that we needed to borrow from the future for the COVID. I would never say you shouldn't, and I would never have said you shouldn't in the Great Depression either. But we had been borrowing from the future for the 12 years before anything happened. We'd been running money supplies of 8-9% a year or 7-9% a year when we had a growth of what, 2% a year. So we were pushing 6%. Now some of it, they put so much money in that the economy couldn't even absorb it, so it was getting kicked back to the Fed every night. So the velocity did drop some, but not enough to. And we basically lied about the inflation. All of a sudden, now we have this issue. And eventually, I think, and I don't want to see these guys out of control, because I've seen it before. And it's really ugly, Dan. I don't know how they push that this is all wage inflation. I mean, wages have been held down for 20 years, for God's sake.
A long time.
So, I mean,
it's what we've been waiting for, though, for so long. And I think once that hits, that's going to be the, it's going to hit and it's going to stick, and I think that's going to be the thing that wakes them up to realizing that it is here to, you know, it is here to stay, and it's not just this temporary phenomenon of supply chain issues and more demand, because I do think that demand will continue, and I think demand continues to accelerate, and the question is, at what point does that slow down? And you know, we already have Powell saying that things are going to moderate, but we haven't even gotten through, like, what I think is going to be one of the busier or more productive quarters, which is the quarter we're in right now. I think there's going to be more expansion continuing through this quarter, and then we're going to see the results of that, you know, towards the end of the year, which is, I think, maybe when there'll be a reaction.
Dan, what is your personal, and I know you have one, what is your personal hedge and the gross GDP numbers right now due to inflation? What does the growth have to be for you to think that there's actually growth and not just nominal growth, meaning the prices are just higher?
I think it has to be sustainable for a period of time. So, you know, I think it has to be, let's see how things look towards the end of the year and see where we are, if we're still where we are today. And my belief is that we're going to be even higher as the year goes on. So I think the hedge against that is, one, to stay really well diversified.
Yep.
You know, amongst industries. In terms of bonds, you know, looking at floating rate note, you know, ETFs, for example, or bank loans, there's a high yield bond, zero duration, HYZD. And that provides a good hedge for higher short rates or higher interest rates, period. But I think of the average maturity or average duration on a high yield bond is much shorter than it's ever been. But anyways, looking at things that will perform well in a rising interest rate environment as a hedge, I mean, silver and gold traditionally have been a good hedge in this environment, having some of those in the portfolio. And then I think that, you know, the steady eddies are these dividend paying stocks and these preferred stocks that are still giving you some yield. So buy them on pullbacks. And those will give your portfolio some stability in this period that, you know, this will be your hedge in this period that I think is expecting, that I'm expecting to continue to be pretty strong over the next year.
Well, you'd like the company that has their factors of production go up 5% and they can raise their prices 10%. Now, question is how do you find that place? I mean, you my suspicions are you pick the places that have the greatest monopoly power, but that's just a suspicion and maybe a personal. You know, a personal thought. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, I'd like to believe, well, I think I do believe, and I probably could prove it if I had, you know, 15 smart guys like you that could actually do the work. I gotta believe that the Home Depots of the world are swimming in cash with this. I mean, they're laughing all the way to the bank. Because, I mean, the lumber prices went up, and I spotted when I was there to rent some stuff, you know, a $65 piece of plywood. Now lumber prices have come back down. I'm guessing the thing is 63 and not, you know, 35 like it was to start out. So I mean, I think the more that's why I'm really very afraid of it, Dan, is because I think we have this monopoly power that's been kind of been creeping along the whole way. And now when you get inflation, all of a sudden that monopoly power is about the most important thing you can get. I mean, boy.
Yeah, and those are the companies that you want to be invested in.
Yeah.
The ones that have market share, the ones that have, you know, strong management teams, the ones that can pass through cost increases, the ones that can sustain, you know, their margins, you know. Right now it's also, I think, those companies that are going to be able to deal best with the supply chain issues that they have. So here's a little bit of a window, if you will, you know, as we get through this period of companies that are not necessarily struggling, but they're just sort of, like I said, their stocks have backed off a little because, you know, Aztec is another one that we've talked about before that I think are still going to benefit from the infrastructure, you know, the increase in infrastructure, you know, driving around the roads here in the greater Boston area. I mean, there's no question that that we need infrastructure. We need repaving. You know, it's across the country. I mean, there's absolutely no question. So there's absolutely no question that we're going to get a bill that's going to support infrastructure at the very least, which is what we need. And I think companies that are poised to take advantage of that, that have, you know, market share, that have the right products, that have the right pricing power, that have the right management teams, those are the ones that are going to take advantage and be able to participate. And I think you're going to see increases in those stocks. So those are, if you're looking for an opportunity in this market environment, those would be the ones that I would stay with. The ones that I probably would not stay with are the ones that are going to be challenged by increases in rates, increases in, you know, rapid increases, or maybe a sudden move by the Fed. And so again, it's trying to stay protected from that. And that's generally our strategy, anyways. Is,
Dan, how do you
be a little more conservative? And
I would agree with you. In matter of fact, as a firm, one of my brother has some investors, and they did it on their own. It's not like we're putting together a mutual fund or anything, but guys with the Biden group coming in put together a very nice little package. A few guys did it on their own. Again, it's not anything we're marketing or anything like that, but you know, we help with the research a little bit. They when Trump came in, he went around in his campaign, all he did was talk about steel companies coming back, right?
Right.
And as soon as the guy got in, the steel companies... If you were a vlogger steel company, you're ready to take the guy's toupee off. I mean, they went straight
right.
down. And now
right.
this guy comes in, and all he's talking about is the you know, electric cars and this and that. And if you were involved in what some of these guys did, and I think they still probably got winners, so, but they didn't get they got the wrong time, and their timing was a little off. They're into every piece of this electric car market, the batteries, the guys who make the plug-ins for the, you know, when you get to the side of the road and all that stuff. They were every piece of this thing, and that stuff has gone straight down since Biden came in. Meanwhile, the steel companies are going to the moon.
Any oil companies.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I see you're like, the oil companies are going to the moon. I'm like, This is like bizarre world, or is it just me?
No, the thing is, fortunately, I think businesses are, people are realizing that a lot of the talk, a lot of it, this is talk, the time frame is going to be much longer, I think, before, we become a world of electric vehicles. And there hasn't really been, you still have to get from point A to point B. You still need to heat your home. I mean, we still need to have, especially as people start going back to work, you still need to have your, real estate still needs to be operating. There still needs to be, I think the manufacturing sector of the economy is still strong. And I hear that from just sort of people I talk to who are sort of on the floor in those businesses, and not just businesses that are supporting, a green company. I think companies that are going to do best in the world, in the quote green world, are those companies that are already in, electric utilities, that are already in, that are going to be able to work the transition. So one name that I've mentioned before that I like is Black Hills, which is a utility that's based in South Dakota.
What's that
and
symbol,
they have,
Dan?
South Dakota, Wyoming, Colorado.
That's BKH.
And they're ahead of the game. So I think that's a company that will, when it comes to things like renewable energy and, how the transition is going to take place, they're already there. So they're in the best shoes to be able to make that change. A new startup that's doing this is going to have a tougher time. They have to prove themselves.
That's BKH,
a lot of
right?
In front of them.
That's BKH?
BKH is Black Hills Corporation.
I mean,
really strong management team. You're talking about a monopoly, but they have certainly have a monopoly in their markets. They pay a decent dividend. They're a company that's, they have, believe it or not, a small coal facility still, but their main focus is on electric utility, their electric utility, but they also are talking about renewables, and I really believe that they're a company that would be better positioned to make the transition to, than a startup.
Well, every one of these smaller, manufacturing companies, when I say every one, my nephew's, one of them is like a programmer for these more advanced machines, and obviously he's got friends in the industry. God's sake, Dan! They got orders out as far as the eye can see. I mean, even the electric utilities need pumps, right? And they need parts for pumps. I mean, it's I agree with you. I mean, that's the area if you can possibly be in. Even if people are ordering the original machine from Korea or someplace, somebody's got to do the replacement parts. These guys are doing just as well making replacement parts as they were to machine in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. One other name that kind of goes along with that is a company that's an electrical contractor. They do electrical construction on the large scale, and it's MYR Group. And they're a company that will also benefit from, they've been around since 1891. They're, they do a lot of, they do transportation and distribution of electricity, but they also do maintenance. And kind of like MasTec, who we've talked about in the past, MTZ, this is a name, in terms of the stock itself, the stock price has gone up in one direction this year, but really good management team again, and really in the right place at the right time. And again, I would put my money with them to watch us through a transition and, an energy transition, if you will.
When you say electric supply, you're talking
they've
like...
been around for a while and...
Are you talking like transformers and stuff? When you say electric supply, I mean, what level are they in? Wires or transformers or...?
Everything, but anything to do with electrical construction.
Okay.
So they do the full gamut, and they're, they do commercial and industrial, but they also do just the transmission. So they're, anything to, conductors, anything that it has, anything that has to do with electrical contracting, electrical construction.
Maddie says they're right here in Rolling Meadows, right by us.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Have you been out to see them?
Not yet, but I'm on my. I'll be coming out there.
Are you gonna call us up and buy us a beer?
Absolutely, absolutely.
We might even take you to dinner, but what the hell?
Hey,
good to meet you.
Sounds good to me.
We'll even bring Maddie. He's very good at stuff like that. He likes to. He's a very good entertainer.
I can drink and eat with the best of them. Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's great. we'll keep this trend going. I don't know about in Chicago, but like I said, the restaurants here in Boston are jam packed.
We're doing better. The downtown area. Literally from downtown, there might be a place. Maybe, I don't. If I want to go for breakfast this morning, I don't know where I'd go.
We're very much open in the neighborhoods, but downtown is still pretty empty.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, last night I was, yeah, I was in one of the suburbs, and man, it was on a Wednesday night. You'd have sworn it was Saturday.
Yeah. So okay. So the same thing happening here, but the city, the downtown here, is still hopping. I mean, this is a popular time here, anyways.
Yeah, we got the downtown is like remember the neutron bomb? It's like one off.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's pretty much. Well, Dan, thank you for these names.
Sure.
And we'll put them up like we always do, and on the site for anybody who wants to go review. And we'll have you back next week, bud. Take care of yourself.
Sounds
SP Futures down 15, NASDAQ Futures down 2. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Holley, Mr. Brent Weber. S&P futures are down 14, NASDAQ up 2, Dow futures down 148. We have the jobless claims number came in at 360 as expected. And Ian, we're done with this, so I'll ask you what you make of that number. It sure seems like for the amount of people that are getting hired, there's an awful lot of people leaving. It just seems like there's a spin around in the workforce here, but let's talk about that when we're done with this. I say done with this. We'll do a find out what's going on around the rest of the world. In Europe, we've got down reasonably heavy. DAX down 156.1%. FTSE down 50.7%. CAC around down 50.8%. Pretty much down across the board. Nikkei down 329. That's 1.2%. Shanghai over up 1% as the Chinese growth numbers came in pretty decently, if you believe them. Anyway, so they're up 36 points. The Hang Seng up 208, that's 0.7%. Hang Seng has been up pretty much every day this week, so those guys have bounced back from being the one that was down a real lot. Yesterday, we reviewed the Dow was up 44, S&P down up 5, NASDAQ down 32. So it was kind of a slow day yesterday. Bonds down again this morning. Oh, I mean, the yield is down. Bonds are up. Down 3 basis points to 1.329. The Bund minus 0.01 to minus 0.33. Japan barely hanging over 0 at positive 0.012. UK at a positive 0.68. And they'd made it to, I'm going to say 89 or 90 at one point, a month or two ago, and they've come all the way back. Oil, kind of whack this morning. No more over 75. 72.01. It's down $1.12 today. It's 1.5%. Brent down $1. It's 73.73. Natural gas down 3 cents, 3.63. RBOB down 2 cents, 2.26. And we've got gold is up 280 at 1827, trying to hang over this 1800 number. They put a little distance between there, and I could use that about 2000. I don't know when that's coming. Silver up 9 cents, 26.37. Copper up 2 cents, 4.29. And our crypto, Bitcoin down $1,000 now, 31,732. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash on the outbound Edens heading north that happened at Church Street and has the Edens backed all the way up to Dempster. Apparently, this is involving a semi. Police are en route, but expect delays if you're heading outbound on the Edens up toward Wisconsin because of that crash. Inbound side looks okay. Traffic volumes building steadily on the Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower. That earlier crash on the outbound side out west is all clear. Stevenson, normal traffic volumes as well, and the Dan Ryan is a slow mover as you're heading into the circle, but no accidents to report there either. Bishop Ford and I-57 appear to be quiet. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, clouds throughout the day and thunderstorms in the area. We have about a 50-50 shot of rain when you look at the hourly forecast throughout the entire day. So expect some showers, a high of 76. Right now it's overcast and 72 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 104. Right now it's clear and 86. In sports, the Suns fell to Milwaukee last night, losing to the Bucks 109-103. That best of seven NBA final series is now tied at 2 games apiece. And the British Open is underway this morning. Latest look at the leaderboard shows Mackenzie Hughes, the Canadian, in first place by himself. He's 5 under at the moment. Jordan Spieth is a couple of shots back, and it looks like Brooks Koepka is at 2 under, 3 shots back. Chief.
So they got the chalk, well, except for the one guy we never heard of, but everybody else is with rain and that area moist and with sun and not much wind, those guys are going to do well.
Yeah, they're saying it's supposed to be relatively dry there by their standards, but 25-mile-per-hour wind gusts, which that's probably not terrible out there.
No, it's not.
Yeah, so I think there's going to be some good scores.
I mean, the first time Arnie Palmer went over there, he said what he was 3 sweaters and 2 pairs of socks. And John, how are you?
I'm fine, Tom. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I hope you didn't listen to Jerome Powell yesterday, and if you did, I hope you had an air sickness bag, but, you know, it's not... Just saying.
The things they put us through, Tom. You know?
I know. It's like I've never come across this one though. Is that, you know, basically the guy's saying that everything that I've learned, anything in monetary theory, all economic history, it doesn't apply anymore. But he's got a new way, and then all people who think that way or can put patterns together historically, I mean, you're basically wasting your time. He's got it all figured out. So I don't. Boy, oh boy.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, taking a body of science, you know, certainly we've seen this in the medical field too, but all the accepted wisdom that people studied and learned from and used in their decision making, you got to just toss it out because that isn't the science that's, you know, going to qualify for that name anymore. You got to make up something else and trash what used to be science and replace it with something idiotic. So.
Well, I mean, the idea that you turn on the printing press and you send people a check, then you say, wow, the economy's going great. People have money. Well, duh. Of course they got money. You just sent them a check, you buffoon. I mean, the question is, where did you get it, and do they have to pay it back, right, at some point?
I mean, those are the key questions, not whether they have money. Of course they got money. You just sent it to them. And what am I missing?
Well, you've stolen it from their future.
Yeah.
And they're going to use it to pay off current obligations, but that means they're going to have less down the road. How could it be any way different?
But that is, if it's done rarely and prudently and when needed, is certainly something that we do all the time.
Of course, and you bank on things recovering fast enough, you know, and furiously enough that you're going to, you know, outpace, you know, having borrowed from the future at a ridiculous rate, because eventually your present is going to look pretty good. But I don't see any way of overcoming this mountain of debt without just making it hard for people to stay afloat. So,
well, you have to at least have some sort of a plan. I mean, but you know, I mean, and the interesting part is if people come in and they say, and I've had, well, the treasurer, I mean, I was Janet Yellen said it specifically, but other people have come in and said, well, it's not having its intended effect because people are like paying down debt and those kinds of things, and they're not going out and spending it. Well, if somebody loans you some money, and the first thing you do is go, you know, do a everybody gets around four nights in a row at the Tripoli, and you basically piss it away, and it's a loan, I'm not so sure that's really all that smart.
Right.
I mean, if you use it to pay down some debt that you're paying interest on and say, okay, when the bill comes for this other one, at least I gained on the interest, that to me seems somewhat rational. But again, I'm not putting my view of rational. The idea that it's like the drunken sailor, you know, he gets his paycheck, and on Monday, when I used to work at the truck decks, right, way back, and you got paid every Sunday, I think you got paid like on Tuesday or something. So these guys, no, I'm sorry, you got paid on Friday. So these guys, we were getting paychecks. This is 1975. You know, paychecks were, I mean, mine, just for working the weekends. I was working Friday night and Saturday with the overtime and stuff. The paychecks, you know, $250, $300, something like that. It was real dull. And these other guys worked all week, so it had to be more than that. And we're not talking about, I'm not getting into class warfare here. We're not talking about the kind of dudes. Well, there were no casinos, okay, so maybe you could play poker with your buddies. These are not the kind of dudes that were going to take the girlfriend and go and have an $80 dinner, which would have been serious money. I don't know, could we even know a place we could have an $80 dinner in 1975?
I couldn't spend $80 on dinners in a month back then.
Well, I mean, we could have gotten two ladies and headed down to the pump room or someplace, and
right.
You know, I mean, you could have done it if you set your mind on it. You know, we could have had gone to, was it Mr. What was the place next door to steak joint, and the number one steak joint now, Gibson's. The place next door, it's the Frog Bar, Maddie.
Yeah, Hugo's.
Well, that used to be Mr. Kelly's.
Okay.
So that was like the hot nightclub. We could have pissed away $100 at Mr. Kelly's, probably, you know. But by and large, for the group that I'm talking about, you know, the $250 on the weekend, these guys are all borrowing $20 from people on Sunday night. I'm like, how the hell? At that point, they could have gone in virtually any bar, had six or seven beers and a burger, and walked out of there. If that would have been $8, I'd have been stunned, John, right? I mean, how did those guys blow $250 in 48 hours? I mean, without losing it. I mean, but anyway, it was somewhat of a different world. But there's no hint that, oh, by the way, we're going to get this money back one of these days. I mean, do we really think it's not that all of a sudden people aren't going to, sneak these taxes up? I mean, they gave all these states enough money that maybe the states don't need to. I mean, Illinois actually had probably their best year ever with all the money they got from the Fed, right?
Yeah, and our bond rating is creeping up.
Yeah.
I'm kind of stunned.
Well, you know, last night, talk about, I get home, of course, it's 11 o'clock, which is pretty darn late for me, but I go, all right, I got to see what's going on in the world. So I hit the computer, and I get this thing, America's 10 best states for infrastructure.
Oh, I saw that too, Tom.
I mean, well, that's because I sent it to you.
I'm still sitting down.
Yeah, I'm like, so, Matty, guess who's number one?
What?
Illinois.
Illinois.
Yeah.
And I don't...
Who knew, Tom?
Yeah, who knew? But, I mean, Well, you know, the weird part is when the CBOE was built, which now they're not even in the building, which is, don't get me started on that, but it was such a unique place. I mean, it was such an amazing place to work because it was, you know, people in there were all entrepreneurs. I mean, it was just a healthy place to be in terms of people were their own boss, and it was really pretty neat. But when they built that place, the people who designed it, and a lot of them were Larry Bloom, who I found out last night has recently passed, which is unfortunate. I like Larry a lot. These guys did everything you could possibly think of. They said, okay, Chicago at the time had the reputation for probably the best electrical infrastructure anywhere. I mean, I'm going to say the world, John, not just in the U.S. I mean, Commonwealth Edison, like, never had an outage. I mean, or if they did. So even then, there were two power stations, one coming from the big coal plant they just took down, Matty. You know, if you go to the South Loop, you'll see over by Manny's, the deli, you'll see this big bank of transformers. So there's a south feed to the loop, and there's a west feed, and I'm sure there's a north feed from someplace. And so the CBOE on two sides of the building had totally independent feeds in one building, and it's, you know, because they said, okay, this trading floor has to work. So if something happens, if there's a big bolt of lightning somehow whacks the south side transmission area, the near south side transmission area, and if in the unlikely event, like the one in a gazillion chance of that happening, we can totally operate the place from our north side feed or west side feed. I mean, like, no building has that. But that's the kind of stuff they did in the place, and this was 1984 we opened up. And then I was on the board in 90-something, and all of a sudden, the Commonwealth Edison's having some outages and brownouts and things like that. So the CBOE, to maintain the same sort of, always going to be there, decides they're going to put a generator on the roof. So they essentially plunk what looks like a locomotive without the wheels on the roof, which is the generator. They got all the, you know, diesel fuel up there and a whole bit, where they can run this generator and power the whole place if Commonwealth Edison messes up on both feeds. Now, Jan, talk about overkill, right? Well, like 2 years later, they're getting phone calls from Commonwealth Edison. Hey, guys, we'll cut down your bill if you turn the generator on because we're running short of power. So they would call them up and say, hey, please turn your thing on, because the thing had more power than the CBOE needed, so they could actually backfill into the system, I understand, or from what I understand. And so any 95-degree day, they're calling the CBOE, hey, would you please turn the thing on? We need it. I mean, how does that change? And still, maybe I'll go through the states here, and we start out with, and I give you the reason why. Like, Georgia's number 6, all right? Here's what they use. They use infrastructure score 233 out of 375, which gives them a B+. Population within 500 miles, 77 million, so that's how you draw your people. Bridges in poor condition is only 2.5%. Roads in unacceptable condition is only 6%. Broadband access, I would never have guessed Georgia had 85% broadband access. Would you, Manny? Power outages per year are only 2.5 hours. All right, so for, in terms of infrastructure, if you move a business down there, you can expect to be essentially up and running in Georgia, be able to hire people, and not bust your car up getting to work. And that's basically what they're doing. I'm dying to see who's number one as I go through the 10 from the bottom. And sure enough, second is Nevada. And they got a picture here of this solar thing, which is really something. They've got, man, have you ever seen, or Jan, have you ever seen one of these arrays where they have a tower with, like, I don't know what's in there. It's not water, but it's some kind of liquid. They have this huge tower, and they put all these for like a mile around in a circle, maybe not a mile, but pretty darn close. They aim these convex mirrors to catch the sun and aim it at the tower. Have you ever seen this, Manny? This kind of technology? Well, they aim it at the tower, so this very focused light, it's like Reed taking a magnifying glass and putting it on a leaf and setting the leaf on fire, right? Which I'm sure everybody did as a kid. Well, this thing has all these mirrors focused on this tower to superheat whatever's in the damn thing to power electricity. And they got some of that going in Nevada. So Nevada's number 2, and their story is, infrastructure is 248 out of 375. They're not as good on the population. Population in 500 miles, 51 million. Bridges in poor condition. Of course, what do you need a bridge for in Nevada? There's no water, there's no river. Anyway, 1%. Roads in unacceptable condition, 4%. Broadband access over 85, 85.3. Power outages per year is only 1.5 hours. So they're number two. Illinois is number one. And most of it's because of rail. Because you can get to just about anywhere from here, rail or road. Right, Jan? And then the rails are still good condition. Infrastructure at 272. The population within 500 miles, 90 million. Now here, bridges in poor condition, 9%. So that's nowhere near as good as these other guys. Roads in unacceptable position, 21%, which basically sucks. But broadband access, 89. Manny, would you ever have guessed that we have broadband access for 89% of the state?
No, I wouldn't even know where to start.
I would never have guessed that.
That's just in terms of geography or availability, not certainly actual accounts.
It must be access. I mean, what is? Manny, don't take this wrong. You're from Iowa. If you're living in rural Iowa, where do you get your broadband? Do you get it from Hughes? Do you get it
I never lived in the country. I have no idea.
I mean,
the city I lived in was 250,000 people. It wasn't like I don't know anything about what people do in the country.
I didn't mean to make you out to be a rube, but
no, I know that. But I'm saying I literally have no idea. I've always had access to everything.
Well, where do you suppose people get it? Even
where do you suppose?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Even the far suburbs, I guess. To be honest with you, Audrey lives in Orland. Okay, so obviously she has cable. All right, but then when we go west, I'm following Horace Greeley. When we go west to one of our favorite restaurants in Mokena, you're driving past there'll be a subdivision and then there'll be a farm and then there'll be a couple houses on a few acres and there's this smattering of stuff. Is all that stuff wired? I mean, there's that much wire for all those cables for those.
I assume they have like satellite or something out there.
So, but you can get broadband off a satellite.
I think so.
Can you upload from your place or is it just down? I heard with Hughes you can get the stuff down. You can't upload very well. I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
I would have no idea.
We'll have to.
I've always had cable since 1989, probably.
Yeah,
my whole life. So I mean, I was born in 83. So since I was 6 years old, I've been and lived in a wired cable situation.
So you,
I've never once not experienced
you
not
told
having
me,
cable.
You told me you were corn tasseling. You didn't know if that guy had power out.
I did that. Yeah, I did that one summer. We got picked up in a parking lot and drove out like 45 minutes in the middle of nowhere. And I did that for a week, and it was the hardest thing I've ever done. And I was like, I'm never doing this again.
So you didn't have a chance to ask.
I got paid. I made out with a couple girls, which was fun. And I got paid more money, per hour than a 14-year-old could ever make doing anything else.
Well. So,
or 13-year-old, or however old I was.
Speaking of which, even though this is a family show, yesterday, John, I got my my first vaccination, right? It's for the COVID, because I went to had my checkup, and I had the, everybody knows I had the COVID last October, so I said to my doctor, when should I be getting this? He said, well, because it's probably 6 months to a year your antibodies are good, because you took the test and you had them, but he says, you're pushing 8 months, now would be the time. Why push it? So I had to get a refill, a prescription. So I go to Walgreens. There's a lady in there. And I said, what's the procedure for getting a vaccine? I said, which one do you guys have? She said, well, we got the Moderna. She said, we haven't had, any problems with it. And I said, okay. And what do I have to do to get one? She says, well, you could make an appointment. She says, or we could just do it right now. And I'm thinking, that used to mean something else. But that ship may have sailed. Anyway, so I got my vaccine. And you know what? The weird part, Jen, is, when I was a kid, I had to take some allergy shots and stuff. I mean, it was like you got harpooned with those metal shots where they'd put them in the steam thing and they'd reuse them. They'd sterilize them. You can't even feel these things. You honestly don't even know you got a shot. I'm like, what kind of needle are you using? She goes, a real sharp, thin one. And I go, really? I mean, I'm like, what is that? I mean, and so anybody who's not getting their vaccine because they think it's going to hurt, that's not going to happen. I was stunned, yeah. I mean, anyway, it happened, took a couple minutes, so, and I feel fine today. So whatever, it's, I knew I was going to do it at some point. Now I guess I'm glad I didn't stop procrastinating. So there. A little bit of a story. I'm not advocating anything. I'm just saying, I mean, it's all over. Anybody now who says they can't get it, God, there's got to be a drugstore in every block that's got it, right, Manny? I mean, there's no place that doesn't have it.
Everyone has it. There's no line. You don't even need to make an appointment. You can just show up and get it.
I was in Walgreens yesterday, and, you know, come on in. You know, there's signs everywhere. So there's no waiting. So
did you, we only got a minute, did you ruin your day by listening to Chairman Powell yesterday or no?
I didn't. I just read about it afterwards, which is sickening enough.
God. Manny, I tell you what, on the sports side, I would really, really recommend everybody who's got a spare 4 minutes to watch the 4 minutes of that game last night, the last 4 minutes. That was really something.
Well, yeah, I retweeted a slow motion video that's pretty cool, about 20 seconds long, of that block that Giannis had
on something.
The alley-oop. They're throwing an alley-oop to Ayton. He catches it, and Giannis comes out of nowhere and blocks it, and that might have saved the game for them. Having the NBA Finals on, Kevin mentioned this yesterday, you know, last night is usually the worst day in sports. The day after the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, there's usually nothing on. I mean, nothing.
It's like just the day after Super Bowl, only worse.
Right. And, the fact that, the NBA Finals are pushed this late into the summer made, last night very enjoyable to have something to watch, that was live and entertaining.
Well, the place.
And we got the auto show now in July.
That's right.
Yeah. Instead of having to be 20 below.
Well, but it's also outside, and it's going to rain.
Outside, right?
Yeah. So the guys that run around, Matty, with the rags, every time somebody touches a car, they're over there polishing it. What are they going to do if it rains?
Good question.
They better have an army of dudes. S&P futures down 16. The NASDAQ futures down 2. Thanks, John. Thanks, Matty. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.